We're talking with the head of the Oneida Nation on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The chairman of the Oneida Nation, Dehasi Hill, delivered the 15th annual State of the Tribes address to the Wisconsin legislature yesterday. We're looking at key points of his speech, gathering your reaction along the way at 800-642-1234. Are you a member of one of the tribes Chairman Hill was representing yesterday? What's an aspect of his speech that really hit home for you? Was it his call to address the opioid epidemic? Was it access to health care, his emphasis on environmental protections? Join in by phone. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Chairman Dehasi Hill was born and raised on the Oneida Reservation. He is from the Bear Clan, and he graduated from the Oneida Nation High School. He was elected chairman of the Oneida Business Committee in 2017. Chairman Hill, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Well, each year, the Great Lakes Intertribal Council selects a member of a tribe to give the State of the Tribes address to the legislature. Why were you selected to give the address this year?
We try to do it on a rotating basis, and I guess Oneida hasn't been up to deliver the State of the Tribes address since the first or the second time it was completed. So it was.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
You were there representing Wisconsin's Native tribes, and what did you want to hit home to lawmakers and convey about these tribes through this address to the legislature?
Well, I think it was very important to make sure that everybody was aware of the tribes' current standings within the state and our economies and our culture and the environment. And our families were our top priorities for tribes generally across the state.
How are families doing among the tribes?
Well, according to census data, tribes are doing much better than they have been since between the 1990 census to the most recent census. There has been quite significant improvements tribes have been making for general family income, and the poverty rates have all been improving, but there's still a lot of work to do.
Poverty and unemployment still an issue.
Yes, definitely.
Last May, the Oneida Nation partnered with St. Norbert College to measure its economic impact on the economy. What did you find?
Yes, that was a very interesting study. We've been looking forward for that information for having that study completed for quite some time. And it really showed how much Oneida has grown over the years, about a $300 million increase in economic impact since 2006 to last year, which is, I think, a tremendous increase that we were able to provide more jobs for families, living wages, and really improve our health care on the reservation for our community members and our employees. So there was great strides in education made as well. And we were able to demonstrate the cost savings, I guess, to the state and local governments when the tribe takes over programs and services for our members. It saves the state of Wisconsin tax dollars.
When you look at the impact on the economy and the state's overall economy, and you're saying that household incomes are rising, fewer families are in poverty, what about median household income? How has that changed? What do the numbers look like?
Well, one of the important, I guess, aspects since 1990 to current, the household median income has continued to grow. And incomes for families living on the reservations is still falls behind the state of Wisconsin general public. The tribal families are only earning about 70% median income as compared to the state residents. So there's still growth, but there's still a lot of room for improvement, and we hope continuing to work with the state of Wisconsin and our local governments to assure that the economic impacts of the nation also helps raise up the families in our communities as well.
We're talking with Dehasi Hill. He's chairman of the Oneida Nation, and he delivered the 15th annual State of the Tribes address to the Wisconsin legislature yesterday. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. How do you want to see the state legislature address the points Chairman Hill raised? What obstacles do you see in the way of that happening? What opportunities do you see? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Chairman Hill, let's talk about Act 31 that you brought up in your speech. You highlighted this proposal that the State Tribal Relations Committee recommended and the Joint Legislative Council voted to introduce as legislation, Act 31. Can you tell us about what that does?
Yes, that's the state statute that mandates that Native American history and cultures and sovereignty be taught in public school systems. And so that has a far-reaching effect on both our families and our communities when people know the history of the state and its, I guess, its first inhabitants, being Native Americans, and the contributions that we have made both to the state and to this country are very important.
How is Act 31 doing? Is it making a difference, do you see?
Yeah, I think it definitely is making a difference. You know, this act was put in place back in the 80s and early 90s when tribal sovereignty was under attack and treaty rights, specifically the fishing rights, were under scrutiny, especially in northern Wisconsin. And part of what came out of that was the need for better education of all the state residents about Native American tribes in Wisconsin and our treaty rights that have been upheld over the years, and specifically the what are some of the more important ones for individual tribal members is both the rights to hunt, fish, and gather.
Your speech also pointed out that there are still dozens of public schools using mascots, logos, or nicknames. And I remember when my own high school mascot was changed in 1989. How do you hope to see the legislature address this?
Yeah, I definitely would hope that new legislation is put into place. There has been several states, and I think more recently it might have been Massachusetts had just passed a state law kind of banning the use of Indian mascots and logos in public schools. So I think that's really the direction that we're looking to move the state of Wisconsin forward.
You also brought up the environment. We often hear about the ways global warming is affecting us quite broadly, but how might global warming impact the tribes in particular?
Well, I guess in particular for us, you know, as a part of climate change also comes with invasive species of, you know, bugs and insects that weren't native to this area coming in and harming some of our cultural resources. Like for Oneida specifically, we use the black ash tree to make our traditional baskets, and the emerald ash borer is devastating that tree across the entire state of Wisconsin. So things like that are very detrimental. And then also with climate change, even for the Chippewa tribes, the birch bark tree is very significant to them for their baskets and canoes and artwork. So, you know, as the forests warm, trees that are more do better in the environment when it's with cooler temperatures, they will recede and move further north and potentially out of the state of Wisconsin eventually.
We're talking with Oneida Nation Chairman Tehasi Hill a day after his State of the Tribes address to the Wisconsin legislature, looking at key takeaways from his speech, getting your insights as well at 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment on the Ideas Network. We're talking with the head of the Oneida Nation on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Native Americans in Wisconsin continue to trail behind the general public in many critical areas. Chairman Tayasi Hill pointed out these statistics in his address. The unemployment rate is double when compared to the rest of Wisconsin residents. Poverty rate almost three times all of Wisconsin families. Substance abuse rates 6 to 8 times higher than the general population. Did you watch Oneida Nation Chairman Tayasi Hill's speech yesterday? What aspects of his speech struck you the most? Are you a member of the tribes Chairman Hill was representing yesterday? What do you want to ask the leader of the Oneida Nation? Join in at 800-642-1234 as Chairman Hill stays with us. Let's now talk about health care. In your speech, you pointed out that the Indian health system, a federal program, is really underfunded. Give us some more context to that. What does the funding look like?
Well, I guess in general, the for the Midwest region, tribes receive it's really only about 40% of the need, 44% of the need. So what that means is tribes are footing the bill to make sure that adequate health care is provided. And so, you know, as you know, I mentioned in the speech, the federal government through its treaties has guaranteed that the health and welfare of American Indians be taken care of, because the large cessions of land and resources treated to the United States from tribes across the country really is kind of the impetus of why we still have this treaty rights in place, and the guarantees of the health care for our members is vitally important that we maintain these contracts.
Let's look at the opioid epidemic. It has had a considerable impact on tribes. Can you give us a snapshot of what that looks like compared to the rest of Wisconsin?
Yes, the opioid epidemic has really hit tribes, you know, across the country quite hard. And you know, one of the aspects that we really looking hard at is the reasons why people are trying to self-medicate, essentially. You know, what's going on in their lives that would cause them to want to try these illegal drugs. And the more we look into it, it's really about the historical trauma that our people have faced over the generations. And so that is really a large cause. And not everybody is educated about the historical traumas that our ancestors have went through, and maybe even not even as far back as, you know, hundreds of years ago. Just we're talking, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s about federal government policies that were detrimental to tribes across this country.
Let's go to Mark now, joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, Chairman Hill, thank you for your address yesterday. I look forward to hearing that. I actually live right on the edge of the Oneida Nation reservation, and I'm not a tribal member. I'm newer to the community. And so my question is kind of twofold. More specifically for me, being in our community, are there any specific ways that you can think of that I can help partner with your community, that our communities can work even closer together? And then perhaps in a more broader sense, as you spoke on behalf of the many nations within Wisconsin, what about some of the folks like me who aren't a part of any particular tribe but are looking for ways to connect with our overall community and, kind of partner with what you guys are doing?
Great questions, Mark.
Yes, thank you for that question. That was, I think there's a lot of opportunities, especially, you know, locally. I think it's important that we have friendly people and elected to local government positions. I think that goes a long way in helping tribes. People who are, you know, open-minded and want to work together, you know, really would help the local relationships between the local governments and the tribes in the state. So I think that's one very large, I think, aspect, important aspect going forward is participation in the government at whatever level is possible. And then and the other, to answer your other question, there's, you know, here in Oneida, we put on a lot of public events, and we do a lot of community outreach, and And I think it's really just getting familiar, coming to our events and getting to know the people, getting to know your neighbors. I think that's that also goes a long ways in building and trust and community support for each other's endeavors. You know, as I mentioned this in the speech, a lot of the things that are affecting tribes are also affecting Wisconsin residents in general. So any time that we can get together and talk about issues and try to find solutions, whether it be at a festival or just sitting down in a restaurant having a lunch together, all those things are, I think, great steps that move Wisconsin forward.
Chairman Hill, as we wrap up, there were a number of issues you addressed yesterday in your speech. What do you focus on with the legislature to impact change in all of the areas you've addressed?
Well, really, I think it's continued work and collaboration on the State Tribal Relations Committee. That is the committee where all the tribes have representation on the committee, and they work with the state legislature to identify areas that are of mutual interest that we hopefully can get bipartisan support on to move these issues forward. And I really think that's a great model for other states to follow and for Wisconsin to continue to support.
Well, Chairman Hill, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you, Kate.
Deasy Hill is chairman of the United Nation, and he joined us the morning after delivering the 15th annual State of the Tribes address to the Wisconsin legislature. We're talking now about LGBTQ elected officials on the morning show. More openly lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people are winning elections, signaling a shift in cultural attitudes. As of this year, all 50 states have been served by openly LGBTQ elected politicians in some capacity. Are you a newly elected lawmaker who identifies within the LGBTQ community? Why did you run for office? What is it like to be in your political role? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Stephanie Barron. She is a doctoral student and lecturer of LGBT studies at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Stephanie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it seems like, and there is some documentation here, that more LGBTQ candidates are running for office. Why now? Why this moment?
Well, I think we've always had LGBTQ populations running for office. They may not have necessarily felt comfortable enough to be out. So I do feel, though, that this current visibility is nothing but positive for marginalized communities across the board to feel more comfortable to run for office and to have folks to look up to who have run through the same process and can go through, challenges, strengths, et cetera, in order to win office.
Why do you think voters are electing these candidates? And how important is your sexual identity?
I mean, I feel like sometimes cisgender straight folks only view LGBTQ candidates in terms of their sexual identity or their out sexual identity. But really, just like every other person, LGBTQ populations are also multidimensional and diverse individuals themselves with policies, initiatives, and things that they'd like to incorporate that they feel perhaps are missing from the current political climate. So I think that many people are looking at the policies that LGBTQ candidates are putting forth, and then also they just also happen to be LGBT, queer, et cetera.
Do you think there is a progressive wave right now, or what some are calling this rainbow wave happening?
You know, I'm a little bit resistant to do like a progressive wave or a rainbow wave, because just because someone is LGBTQ, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're overwhelmingly going to be super progressive. They may have issues with mass incarceration or policies that disproportionately are affecting Black and brown communities or trans communities or homeless populations. So it really boils down to keeping folks accountable for their actions, decisions, policies, and I think that's the important part. So I'm a little resistant to say progressive wave or rainbow wave. I am excited though to see the representation, and I feel like a diverse and multi-voiced, you know, state, local, or national legislature is nothing but positive.
LGBT candidates ran for office in record numbers last year. We're talking about how the political landscape is becoming more diverse, what voters think about in this cultural shift. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Coming up after a news update, we'll be talking with the new mayor of Madison, who is the first openly gay and the second woman executive in the city's history. Stay with us for that conversation and more on LGBT candidates right here on the Ideas Network.